14th of March, and we are just finished up with the exam number 2, and we're going to have another exam. Yes, and believe it or not, folks, it's going to be on chapters 17, 7, and 8. 17 has a little bit of meat to it. 7 and 8 is mostly all fluff, believe it or not. And it is also going to ask you many questions that we've just gone over in chapter 6. 5, and it's going to ask you to do the calculations for chapter 6. That's why I said you got to learn this, because I'm going to ask it for the rest of the semester. I'm going to ask you to discount future cash flows for the rest of the semester. Alright? That's the heart of the course. So over the vacation, also the chapter 6 is due next week. I put March 2nd to be March 21st, right? 23rd for the online class. And they can submit it online. So you're going to go over this material again over the vacation. I want you to study chapter 5 and study the calculations for chapter 6. And then the calculations for chapter 17 are very, very easy. Very easy. And then 7 and 8 is just fluff. It's just a... It's... What?
Filler.
Well, I wouldn't use the word filler, but there are people who believe in what's called technical analysis, which we'll get to. And as far as I'm concerned, it might as well be up there with voodoo and witchcraft or reading the entrails of a chicken to try to determine what's going to happen. But they believe it, you know, and you're going to have whole books written on it. So how are we doing, folks? How are we doing? Bum, 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 bum. Not bad. Look, still Apple. Folks, Apple, people just don't. They can't get any love. But Lockheed Martin's coming back. Caterpillar got hit. I don't know why Caterpillar did so well. What, time to buy what?
Time to buy up.
Time to buy more Apple, yeah.
Yeah, we made like $35 out of the $10,000.
No, we've made $3,400.
No, the doctor says $35.
No, but it's okay, hang on a minute. Sorry. I gotta move the screen. There you go. Today it's up $351 today. But here's what we've made. $3,400 from 100,000. Yeah, not from 10,000. That would be a 35% increase. This is a 3.5% increase. Which, hey, in 2 months is not bad, folks. Hard to believe we've been together for 2 months, right? Yeah, but that's how fast. The semester is just... What? We started with $100,000.
Is that where all the school's budget is going?
Were you here that day when we did this? Maybe not. It ain't real money. Okay. It's not real money. Even if I could, I wouldn't take up a collection. Oh boy, wouldn't that be good? Okay, everybody has to come up with $3,000. There's 30 people in the class, 40 people in the class. Everybody's got to come up with $2,200. Okay, fine. No, we're ready to start chapter 17, so let's get started. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? I don't have any good jokes. Nobody has any good jokes? Boy. So you want you? Do we? Should we end the bar jokes?
Yes.
Okay. What should we end on? A real bad one, huh? Did you hear about the termite? Did I tell you about the termite that walked into the bar? This one you got to think about for a minute. This termite walks into the bar and says, "Is the bar tender here?" Is the bar tender here? He's a termite. Is the bar tender here? Not the bartender. The bar. Okay, no more contracts. What? Well, he just asked everybody around. Yeah, is the bar? Yeah, the bartender. He's a termite.
Yeah, another question.
It's a what?
It's a question you just asked.
Yes, it's a categorical rhetorical question. It's out to the world. Okay, let's continue. Now, all right, chapter 17. Anybody have the third edition of the book? Anybody have the third edition? No? Okay, if you have the fourth, fifth, or sixth edition, they're all the same. Well, really. And the fourth edition, chapter 17, deals mainly with financial statements and ratio analysis. And it's important enough to warrant our attention. We will look at all the ratios, but only compute a few, and we'll skip the forecasting since we've basically already done, we've already done the forecasting. What did I do with my cheat sheet? Yeah, the calculators, right? Because I can't find my cheat sheet with all the answers on it. Boop, boop. Okay. Now, how many people have already done accounting? Huh? How many people have taken accounting already? Okay, so what? You're in it? How do you like it? You like it a lot? Okay. Well, here's where the accountants have it over us mere mortals. Because they understand this gobbledygook that started back in the 1300s in those French monasteries when the monks were counting sheep. But the balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flow are the three major financial statements for corporations. There are others, but these are the ones you'll see when you look up a company. They'll have them there, and they have to be reported to the Securities Exchange Commission for publicly traded companies every quarter, right? The 10Q and the 10K. So the balance sheet is the assets minus the liability, and what's left over is called equity. The income statement are the money's coming in and the money's going out. And then, well, wait a minute, how's that different from the cash flow statement? Well, if you've taken 121, the financial planning and money management class, we call the income statement the cash flow statement. And when we do that, the accountants cringe and get very angry at us because a statement of cash flows is something that's very, very different. In fact, they don't usually call it the cash flow. They call it the statement of cash flows. They don't call it the cash flow statement. They call it statement of cash flows. But we mortals just call it the cash flow statement. And this is the summary of the firm's cash flow and other events that cause changes in the company's cash position. So let's take a quick look at the balance sheet. And so we're taking a look at Walgreens. So the handout I gave you, if you open up to the second page, the stapled one, you will see Walgreens' balance sheet. You see, and why do they call it balance sheet? Well, now they are vertical, but they used to be horizontal. The assets would be on the left side, and then there'd be a total at the bottom, and then the liabilities and the equity would be on the right side, and there'd be a total at the bottom, and the two had the balance. That's why they call it a balance sheet. Right? Some people call it a net worth statement, but that's only for personal finance. We'd never use that net worth statement name in the corporate world. So if you look at Walgreens, how many assets does Walgreens have? Look at their total assets. You see the total assets? Total assets. Do you see total assets?
$33 million.
Nah! $33 billion. Because each one of these, where does it say the numbers are in thousands? Does it say that anywhere? I might have cut it off. Again, all numbers in thousands. So the numbers are so large that they just get rid of three of them. So it's really $33 billion of assets. Now, they don't own all of those assets. There are claims against those assets in the form of accounts receivable and long-term debt. So what are the total liabilities? Can you find that number?
$8 billion
is how many? That's the current liabilities. And the total liabilities are something different. See, the accountants, they separate everything into current, meaning that which is going to be used up within a year, and long-term, anything that's going to last more than a year. So be careful on that. What are the total liabilities for Walgreens?
$15 billion.
So what's left over is their net worth, is what we say in the personal finance class, but they call it stockholders' equity. And you see that number should be at the bottom, right? $18 billion. Make sense? What are all those other things? What are all some of those others? Any questions? Any thoughts? Some of you know. Some of you go, huh? What is this crap? Ask. Negative goodwill. That's a hard one to know. I don't know. I have a hard time understanding goodwill. Goodwill. Anybody want to explain it better than I can? Because I can't explain it that well. Good. That doesn't mean I know what I'm talking about. I what? It's a thrift store, right? Goodwill is a thrift store. There was another guy. There's another guy in the other class. He comes up with the worst. I have to top him every time he does it. He said, we used something about illegal. He said, don't say illegal, say unlawful. Why don't you say illegal? Because it's a sick bird. Illegal. I said, all right. No, he's in the other class. Okay. All right. So, goodwill. Goodwill is hard to describe because what it means is something intangible. The fact that you... What is intangible? You can't touch it. So the fact that there's a name on the marquee that says Walgreens and people trust that name, that's goodwill. The fact that it says Coca-Cola on the label and people trust that brand name, that's goodwill. You can't... You want to describe it better?
It is a value. It is a value put in a name for reputation.
That's a good way of saying it. The value...
Estimated value.
The estimated... That's right, because it's an estimate, right? You can't really... put a value on there, but you can when you see what happens when people see Coca-Cola, they buy it. Estimated value put in
the reputation of the company.
Put into the reputation of the company?
It's like Timex and Rolex.
Exactly. That's a good way of looking at it. Is it a Timex? Or is it a Rolex, right? The brand or the company. And that's what goodwill is. I have a hard time understanding it myself. All right. Any other questions? What are net receivables? Huh? Net receivables. It's when you get a net and you catch it with a net. That's what money is owed to you. Accounts receivable is money that's coming in. It's not there yet. It's not in the form of cash. But it's coming in the door eventually, 30 days, 45 days. What's accounts payable? What are they called? Net payables? Exactly, accounts payable. That's the money that we have to pay in the next 30 days or 45 days. So we're not going to, this is not an accounting class, and I don't know about folks, but I don't know. What is, who knows what minority interest is? I don't know. Sounds racist? Okay, so sue Southwestern College and make $1 million. Alright, so that's the balance sheet. Now let's take a look at the income statement. The income statement for Walgreens is going to show us what money's coming in through the door. That's the top line number. That's the third page. Third page. It says income statement on it. Yeah. Yeah, there it is. Income statement. It says income statement on it. That's the top line revenue. And if you listened on those earnings calls assignment, did you listen? They talked about the top line numbers, the bottom line numbers, SG&A or SNA and O, SA and O expenses. And you're supposed to know what the hell they're talking about. They're talking about the income statement. So what's the top line number for Walgreens? Should I put it on the screen?
You know, total revenue?
Yeah, total revenue. What's the top line number?
$1 billion.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's how much we're looking. Where is it? Walgreens income statement. And again, these things are readily available. Yeah, $71.5 billion came in through the door. But wait a minute. Did Walgreens make the Pampers? Did Walgreens make the drugs? Did they make the formula, the baby's formula?
No.
So they had what?
They just sold it all.
They sold it all. So they had to buy that, and that's called cost of goods sold or cost of revenue. You understand? So they sold it for $71.5 billion, but they had to pay $51.3 billion for those goods. So then we have our gross profit. And here's where that SG&A, S&A, selling, general, administrative costs come in. The rent, paying for the employees, paying the electricity bill. That's all their expenses. Almost $17 billion. And so now here is their operating income or loss, and then there are other expenses. Interest expense, tax expense. I'm not sure what minority interest is. And then finally, we get to the bottom line number. They pulled in $71.5 billion through the door, yeah, but they had to pay for the employees, they had to pay for the goods and services, they had to pay out interest expenses, they had to pay out taxes to the government, and that's how much money they had left over. That's how much income, net income, or sometimes called the bottom line. Yes?
Do they pay attention to loss?
Well, sure. If it's a loss, it would be in parentheses. By the way, I'm sorry?
Do they actually have a place for it?
Well, if it were a loss, what would it be in? It would be in parentheses. It would be a sad event.
No, not if they went negative. I'm saying, do they account for, since they bought merchandise or whatever to sell, do they account for
that's called shrinkage. That's a nice name, isn't it? Somebody's stealing it, shrinkage. As if the diapers got smaller or something. No, it's called shrinkage when you just lose things or people steal things. Yeah. I'm not in the retail industry, but I know that it's called shrinkage, and companies do their best to try to avoid shrinkage. Most of the stuff that's stolen from companies is stolen by employees, not the customer. Most of the stuff is sold by the employees. Yeah, question? What? I assume that's somewhere up here. I'm guessing. I'm not an accountant. I did well in my accounting classes, folks. I want to tell you, I got A's in my accounting class. When I left that last class, I said to myself, I ain't never doing this for a living. Unless somebody puts a big stack of $20 bills in front of me, I ain't never doing that again. And I guess that wasn't the best thing to say, but that's how I felt. I do not enjoy accounting. One person was able to explain it to me well. Would you explain to me how come when you take something out of cash, you credit cash? I mean, they shouldn't use the words credit and debit. They should use ching and chong or something.
Because of the bank, they're on reconciliation, so they feed off the bank. So when you take cash from the bank, you debit cash, so you would credit.
They're the bank collector.
Yeah.
But you're not the bank.
Yeah, but when you give your money to the bank, it's a liability for the bank.
Right, but that's the bank's accounting. But if you're the corporation and you pay cash, you credit cash?
Because when you're taking in,
see, one person was able to explain it to me. Well, yeah.
You debit what you receive, and you credit what you parted with.
Nah. A lot of times when you get something, you credit it, right? I don't know. It was a long time ago, folks. I forget it all. I forgot most of it. I never want to have a nightmare of doing journals again. Yes.
So the one person who explained it well, what did they say?
I forget. She was the CFO of the San Diego Zoo at the time. I don't know where she is now, but she at the time she was the chief financial officer of the San Diego Zoo. Very sharp woman. Very sharp woman. Anyway. So now you understand that's their income. It cost they sold $71.5 billion, but after all the expenses, they have $2 billion left over. The bottom line, okay? All right. Now we've discussed this idea. We're going to take a look at it again. Some income and expenses are not always received or paid for in cash. And for this reason, there is the statement of cash flows, or the cash flow statement. And what we do here is we actually track what happened to the checkbook. Because when you are taking expenses away from your income statement, you're doing that to pay fewer taxes. And as we said, some things you don't write a check out. You don't write a check out the depreciation. So the first thing you do in the statement of cash flows, as we'll see, is you add back in the depreciation, because that's cash still in your pocket. So let's take a look real fast at the Walgreens cash flow statement. And we see that it, where did it go? Here it goes. It starts where the income statement ended. See, the bottom of the income statement was $2,127,000,000. The top of the cash flow statement is $2,127,000,000. So you start with the net income, but then look at the very first one, depreciation. Add that back in, because we never wrote a check for the depreciation, so that's cash we still have in our pockets. And then there's some additions to cash and subtractions to cash, and it turns out that for this quarter, or this year, I'm sorry, these are yearly, and then you can also see the quarterly, I'll show you those in a minute, Walgreens' cash position went down by $259 million. After all the financing activities and investing activities and operating activities that the accountants had to play with to make sure we accounted for all the non-cash flows, it went down $259 million. Make sense? We're not going to deal with the cash flow statement, the statement of cash flows. But that's for the accountants. Well, all we're caring about is how much money they got in the bank as an investor. We want to make sure they can make payroll. Questions, thoughts? Did I go too fast? All right, let's continue. What am I going to say? Oh, I want to show you that it's actually very easy to get this information, no matter where you happen to be, because what company do you want to look up other than Walgreens? Well, let's just look up Walgreens. CSX? You like a railroad? CSX. And over here, I spelled it wrong. CSX? You mean CVX? The railroad. CXS. SX. There it is. What did I type? I typed CXS. I'm sorry. There, right over here. You see? Here they are. That's where I got them for Walgreens. And so the income statement, or let's take a look at the balance sheet for CXS, is a big railroad company based on the right coast, not on the left coast. But it shows you the annual data. But if you want to take a look at the quarterly data, then it shows you every 3 months. With me, understand? So it's readily available all around the world. All publicly held companies must show this data to the world every quarter. And how do they do it? They use a system called EDGAR, and I forget what it stands for, but they have to put their 10-Ks in and their 10-Qs. And if you actually try reading these things, you can read the first few pages, but if you have insomnia at night, this will help you, folks. You start reading these things, and within the 2 or 3 minutes, I mean, they have to write all the risks that can happen. It says, okay, well, if it's Tuesday and a meteorite hits, at the same time Ebola breaks out, and at the same time, then we could probably lose money. So it's really something. But it used to be that analysts on Wall Street, especially when things were more concentrated in New York and Frankfurt and London, would be able to get this information before the rest of the world, before they published it. Not anymore. Regulation Fair Disclosure, FD, requires companies to make public disclosures of material information fairly. And that's why we had the earnings call assignment. That's not why I had the earnings call assignment. That's why we have earnings call. I did the assignment so you would experience it. But now, a company is prohibited from giving out this information unless they do it for everybody. So they schedule an earnings call for just before the 9 o'clock Eastern time, before the market opens, or 4 o'clock Eastern time after the market closes. They don't usually ever do it during the market, but I don't know, maybe some people do it. And you can call in or go online and listen to it. And what will happen is they will shoot out the income statement, the balance sheet, the cash flow statement using EDGAR, and it'll become available to everybody on the internet. And at the same time, you can pick up a phone or listen on the internet, and the CFO, the CEO, and other people will discuss the earnings for the quarter and for the year. So it's, everybody gets that data beforehand. And if you are privy to this data, the SEC calls that material non-public information. We call it insider information. And if you trade on that information, you're committing a crime.
The hookup?
Hookup. Right. And so there are countless other sources. Has anybody, a couple people have done the Chapter 5 assignment, right? The earnings call? If you haven't, don't do it, folks. It can be kind of boring, especially because they go on for usually about an hour, sometimes less. And after about 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes, they open it up to questions. And the first few questions are usually pretty good, but then they start asking these really stupid questions, and you just want to slap the person who's asking these dumb questions. But and then, you know, then you can turn it off or fast forward or whatever. But do enjoy and get 10 points out of this deal. I've heard people complain that there's too much information. It's just too much. And what? Is that how you feel? And a great writer, but you wouldn't read his books probably because they're mostly towards brokers, unless you become a broker or an insurance salesperson or whatever. He says wisdom sold separately, right? Great. Here's all this data, but what are you going to do with it? If you don't have the wisdom, that's separate. You don't get that. You don't get that for free. Okay, let's continue. Now, financial ratios. We've already done some financial ratios. This is the relation between two financial quantities expressed as the quotient of one divided by the other. And ratio analysis is the study of the relationships between financial statement accounts. Remember we did the price-to-earnings ratio, and then we did the projecting of what happens if the earnings grow a certain amount, what should happen if the PE stays the same. So that's what we're going to continue to do. We're going to take a look at some of the ones that we've already taken a look at. We'll fly through those quickly, and then we'll take a look at some that we haven't. But recall that there is no one ratio that can be accurately sum up the overall general state of a company. I like to think of it as a stew, right? It's a stew. You're just looking at all these different numbers and trying to get a general idea. You can't just look at one number and go, that's it. That number might be a red flag or something that says, you know, this is not right. Something's wrong. Everybody else has this number. You have this number. Why is it? Is it a good sign? Is it a bad sign? It's a flag as a way to say, you got to go do some more research. That's what I think. Yeah. Each ratio must be considered in the context of all the information gathered. Plus, you must consider any ratio in the context of the industry the company exists within. And we'll take a look at an example. So here are the ones that we've already dealt with. And you're going to deal with them again. That's one of the things about this class is I want you to go back over Chapter 5 and Chapter 6 again. You have the whole spring break coming up after next week. The price-earnings ratio, the PEG. Well, we didn't look at the PEG ratio. PEG ratio is kind of dumb. But all the other ones, dividends per share, dividend yield, dividend payout ratio, book value per share, price to book, price to cash flow, price to sales. And now these ratios use data from the balance sheet or the income statement or both. Plus, most all of them you just look up. PE. Are you starting to get a feel for what PE can do for you? Or what it tells us? Yeah? Price to earnings ratio? You're looking at me like I'm... Exactly. What... When you look at the P/E ratio, what you're basically looking at is the expectation that investors have of the future. Does it mean they're right?
No.
We'll see in 3 to 5 years. The most popular stock market statistic. Historically, P/E ratios were in the 5 to 12 range for mature companies, 14 to 20 for growing companies. Greater than 20 was unusual except during market manias. Today, it's commonplace. The P/E ratio also tells you how long it will take in years, assuming there's no changes in earnings, for the company to earn back its price. If that means anything to you, some people go, well, why is that important? I don't know that it is important, but it's just an idea of how much is it earning. If a company has a PE of 3, it's going to take 3 years. If a company has a PE of 20, it's going to take 20 years. If a company has a PE of 10,000, it's going to take 10,000 years. So here are some companies that you may have heard of. Amgen, you know who they are? It's a biotechnology company, one of the big ones. But Exxon, Google, wow, a lot higher. Amgen's in the middle. J.P. Morgan, not very good. General Mills, Pfizer. Are these companies in the same type of business?
No.
What we need to do is we need to look at companies that are similar. So let's fill out the slide. It turns out that the energy companies, as much as we bitch and hate to pay high gasoline prices, are investors really excited about the prospects for energy companies? With a PE less than 10 for Exxon, Chevron, and ConocoPhillips, that's 76, ConocoPhillips. BP is a little higher, isn't it? Why is that? I don't know. I think investors are a little bit scared of BP because of their freight, because of the oil spill a few years ago. They're still, they haven't gone through all the fines yet. Who knows how much they're going to be fined? Well, what we want is it's a good deal. Right? What we want is a company that we believe is going to grow and pay us dividends. Maybe we're not into dividends, but we're looking to make money. And the PE tells us what investors believe the company's future prospects are. So are investors really excited about the future prospects for the energy companies?
No.
No. Are they excited for the future prospects of the internet companies? Google, have you heard of Sohu and Baidu? They're the Googles of China and the Far East. Google basically left China, by the way. Some people think it wasn't the smartest move, but they were being hacked to death by China. They just said, we're leaving. But what's going on here? Yahoo? A PE of 7? Well, wait a minute. Are Yahoo and Google really competitors? They're really two different kind of companies, aren't they? I mean, Yahoo has a search engine, but nobody uses it. And Google doesn't try to be everything Yahoo is. I am pretty sure that their finance page is making money for them. But some of the other things that they do, I don't know. Have you seen the new Yahoo front page? Everybody I know hates it, who uses it. I still use it. I hate it. I don't know what I'm going to go to, but yeah.
I just don't know what was a good PE.
I can't answer that question, can I?
Well, 2 is bad.
Is it bad? Is it a PE of 2 bad? What does it mean? Remember we looked at Ford? Ford had a PE of 3. Let's look at it again. It'll take 3 years if nothing changes, and of course everything changes all the time. But Ford's PE now is up. See, what happened is investors were expecting the results. They were, yeah, so now their PE is back up to 9. But still, what does a PE of 9 say? What does a PE of 9 say? Not much. Well, what it says is investors are not that excited about Ford's prospects.
What number, I guess, or what area shows excitement? Higher.
Once you get above 20, 25, so we looked at Farsbook, right? And what was Farsbook's? 1800. Have you heard of 3D? Have you heard of 3D? Somebody asked me about this a couple weeks ago. I said, we'll get to them. What do they do?
3D printing.
3D printing. What the hell is that? It's working. It doesn't work that great. Sometimes it works well. Sometimes it doesn't work. They use the 3D printer to make a. Instead of doing this on paper, it lays out a material and builds things. See, eventually all manufacturing jobs are going to go away. It's all going to be done by computers. And they built a 3D printer. I mean, they've used a 3D printer to make an AK-47 or some kind of assault rifle. I think they were able to fire it 3 times before it fell apart. So, I read something along those lines.
It was like a gun, right?
It was a gun, yeah. Right, and it fell apart really quickly. Yeah, because it's still in its infancy. But look at the PE. 64, 65. Are investors excited about the prospects? Now, the question is, are they right? Are they right? We don't know. We'll know in 3 to 5 years. By then, it'll be too late. So you understand what you're up against when you're an investor? You use the PE and all these other ratios to gauge what people believe is going on, and then you have to make your own decisions. You have to say, damn, I think Facebook's going to take off. I'm willing to pay whatever it is, 1,800 PE, because there are however many million people around the world who go there every day to see what baby peeing is doing. You know, their baby, they put the pictures of their baby pooping on the tub. It boggles my imagination how people spend that much time worrying about somebody's cats or something like that. But do you agree with me? I think Facebook is going to fall. I think it's going to fall hard. But that doesn't mean I'm right. Yes. You agree with me? It's stupid. It's absolutely dumb. And people are eventually going to go, what am I doing this for? I got more important things to do. But hey, people watch television. So that's it. You don't have to agree with me. That's the whole idea. That's why I sometimes say there's chocolate and vanilla and some people like strawberry. So are you getting it now? Is it making sense?
Yeah, I couldn't remember what it's like.
Yeah, 15 is about normal.
Yes.
Yeah. So what about Amgen? But Biodeck, investors are very excited. Life Technologies and Illumina. Now, you know some of these biotech companies are going to explode and the others are going to implode. And those were the suckers I went after several years ago. Look at the food companies. Kind of excited about Kellogg's. That's pretty high for a food company. But Hormel, what do they make?
Chili.
Spam, chili, right? Kraft. They sold off, actually. They sold off the snack food. No more Oreos, not part of Kraft anymore. Interesting. Yeah.
So why is Kellogg's suddenly going up?
Because that's a good question. We need to do more research. But just looking at the PE, we know that investors are more excited about the prospects for Kellogg's. Does it mean they're right? Maybe. Maybe not.
What would be a prospect? Do they have an idea of some new line of cereal?
That's what research is all about. Get in there and start looking at the headlines. Start in there and start reading about it. What?
I think it's their marketing.
Their marketing is better?
They're marketing more healthy.
They'll never sell. More healthy. I hope they do. Hey, actually, Kellogg's is a...
Good,
what?
Kellogg's are good.
Kellogg's are good?
I think it's because of corn.
The thing that covers the crime. See, that's the things we need to be as investors. We need to research.
What about that sugar bailout you're talking about?
Sugar bailout? I just read. I just saw the headline. I didn't read anything about it. And the same thing is true for the banks here. The banks, they're not too excited about J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, or U.S. Bank, but Citi Poop, for some reason, they're excited about. Citibank. It's called Citigroup. I don't know why they call it Citigroup. That's because it used to have an insurance company called Travelers. They spun it off, though. I call them City Poop. And then the drug companies here, but then look at Bristol-Myers Squibb. So investors are saying something exciting about Bristol-Myers Squibb. Are you with me? Understand this? You have to look at the competitors. And then this is like a little red flag saying, hey, for some reason investors are a hell of a lot more excited about Bristol-Myers Squibb. That means we have to do more research. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong. Maybe we need to sell. It's too expensive for us. Or just not buy it. Yeah?
Can we chart how excited investors are about the Samsung Galaxy 4?
I don't think Samsung is available on the United States Exchange, is it?
No.
You have to buy it in Korea.
Period.
I think so. Let's take a look real quick. I don't think Samsung is on the exchanges. Nope. No, see, here it is. There it is right there on the Korean exchange. So if you really wanted to buy it, You could buy it on the OTC market. Stay away from these people. There's sharks. Or you can actually buy it on the Stuttgart market, which is not the biggest market in Germany. Frankfurt's the bigger market. So no, it hasn't been taken over to the United States yet. It probably will be because Samsung's becoming a serious competitor to Apple.
How do you find out who their competitors are?
Ah, very good question. Let's take a look at Apple. Not Apple. Let's take a look at let's take a look at Ford. And what does it say here? Competitors. See, that's why when I gave you the chapter 4 assignment, I said get lost. And I don't mean that nasty. I mean really, just explore. Have a good time. Well, and just what I do sometimes when I have an hour to kill, I'll start looking for something. But I do my best. Is that you? Turn it off, will you? Turn it off.
What's your conscience again?
I don't know. It's my conscience. Yeah. So I just try to keep moving. I try to keep moving and wind up in some place that I wasn't trying to get to. If that makes any sense, I don't know if it doesn't or not. Let's keep going. Some of you are getting bored.
This is ridiculous.
But I do want you to think about this, folks, because it's subtle, isn't it? It's subtle. Maybe a high PE is good. Google's high PE in 2005 was scary, 67, but it turned out the stock doubled and doubled again. And the low PE that GM had in 2005 was a trap because, yeah, it's cheap. But investors are not so excited about it, and it was with good reason. How can we account for the wide PE disparity between different industries and different companies within industries? Again, we keep getting back to the expectation of the future. It is the expectation of future earnings and possibly dividends, if the company pays dividends, that investors are looking at. And this was written in the 1960s by the founder of Dreyfus Funds, one of the largest mutual fund companies, Jack Dreyfus. So you have to remember the technology at the time. These were computer chips were still very new. Price divided by earnings. Take a nice little company that has been making shoelaces for 40 years and sells at a respectable 6x earnings ratio. So that's 6. And that was respectable at the time. So anything between 5 and 12, 5 to 15, now it's really low. Change the name from Shoelaces Incorporated to Electronics and Silicon Firth Burners. In today's market, the words electronics and silicon are worth 15x earnings. Just the words. However, the real play comes from the word Firth Burners, which no one understands. A word that no one understands entitles you to double your entire score. Therefore, we have 6x earnings for the shoelace business, 15x earnings for the electronics or silicon, or a total of 21x earnings. Multiply this by 2 because of the Firth burner that nobody understands, and we now have a score of 42x earnings for the new company. In other words, they changed the name of the company to something that nobody understands, and all of a sudden people, it must be good. They put up the price. So all you have to do is replace Firth burners with nanotechnology or 3D printing, which nobody understands, or I think they understand it, and replace electronics and silicon with social networking or China or India, and all of a sudden, boom, everybody buys it.
So it's bring interest then.
What?
It's to create interest.
Yeah, create buzz, create excitement about the future. You get it? It's supposed to be a joke. So now, the PEG ratio. The PEG ratio is just a way to determine whether, or not easily look at, whether the growth is equal to the PE. Because that was traditionally. If the company was growing at 10% a year, 10 PE. It was growing at 20%, 20 PE. That was what people expected. So if you put the PE over the growth ratio, the growth rate, you get a ratio that says 1 if they're equal. If it's 10% PE and 10% growth, 10 divided by 10 is. If it's 20% PE and 20% growth, 20 divided by 20 is. So if the PE is higher than the growth, PEG is going to be more than 1. And if the PE is lower than the growth, PEG is going to be less than 1. That's all. And you don't have to do it because it's already done. You just look it up. It's on the key statistics page of Yahoo. Dividends per share. We already did this in Chapter 5. And we learned how to do that. Again, you just look it up. Dividend yield. You looked it up in Chapter 5. It's on there. You take the add dividends per share. You calculated it in the exam and divide it by the market share. And this is a very important statistic because this allows you to compare the company to a savings account or a bond paying a certain amount of interest. Now, the big difference is the savings account is guaranteed by the federal government. The bonds usually pay. Sometimes they go bankrupt, but very, very unusually. But the stock could stop paying the dividend tomorrow. They could just say, hey, you know what? We're not going to pay the dividend again. So that's the problem with the stock. The dividend payout ratio, we learn how to create that. You take the dividends per share divided by the earnings per share, because if they don't earn it, they can't pay it. And how much are they paying out? Bigger, older companies pay out more of a percentage of their earnings. Newer companies that are growing and reinvesting the earnings back into the company pay out a much smaller percentage. And then the book value per share. This is the one that I tripped some of you up with. I apologize. You take what the company owns, assets minus liabilities, and you divide it by the number of shares outstanding. And again, I asked you to look it up. Some of you didn't do it when you turned it in. It's on the key statistics page at the bottom. You can find it. And this tells you what the company is worth if you were to liquidate the company, sell off all the assets, pay off all the debts, and how much money would you have left over. If the book value, I'm sorry, the market value goes below the book value, there is a real danger of corporate raiders coming in and liquidating the company to get those assets. And some people get very upset about that because, first of all, the people who are working there go out of business, right? They get unemployed. But the economists say, no, no, you don't understand. That's a very important job they're doing because that capital locked up in that company was not being utilized well. We need to plow it under, just as you would plow under the fields. And, you know, I don't know if that's a great analogy, but that's what happens. Now, if you're one of the workers who've worked there for 22 years, how do you feel? Not too happy. And that's why we have systems such as unemployment insurance. It's not to reward people for not working. Now, does that happen? I'm sure it does. You know, it happens. And but the idea is, hey, we want the companies to go out of business that need to go out of business. So new companies can take their place and workers can find jobs in other businesses. That's the idea. Is it perfect? Hell no. As people have been employed for 3 years, 4 years. And then price to book value, price to cash flow, price to sales, they all mean the same thing. It's the same as price to earnings. Take the market price and divide it by the book value. Take price to cash flow. Take the cash, the market price and divide it by the cash flow. These are the things that we looked at in Chapter 6. Current price divided by the cash flow per share. And we said cash flow often differs from earnings. Why? Because some of the items on the expense sheet are non-cash items. For example, depreciation. And we said during the internet mania, many companies were reporting record earnings. At the same time, their cash flow was negative. Remember we discussed that? Nod your head yes? Yeah. How could that be? How could you be making record earnings and your cash flow going down? Well, it's very simple. All you're selling to people who owe you that money. They really didn't pay you that money. You booked it as earnings. You told the world they were earnings. But they're going to be paying you that money over the next 20, 30 years. And they probably go out of business. And you never get a dime of that. And then the last one, right. The last one is price to sales ratio. This is the last one of the common stock ratios. The current price divided by annual sales per share. Again, same idea. Instead of price divided by earnings, price divided by cash flow, price divided by book share, we divide it by the annual sales. And in the internet mania, many companies were never making any earnings, never having any positive cash flow, so they used price to sales to say, oh, look, look, they're growing. They're losing more money. Every more they grow, they lose more money. But that's a good sign, right? And now we're ready to do the profitability ratio. So before we do that, let's wake up. Are you awake yet?
Of course.
All right. I want to start this because we only have 5 minutes. But any questions on the assignments? If you haven't done chapter 5, please do it. What are you waiting for? It's easy. It's easy. All you got to do is go on Yahoo or Bloomberg.
That was hard.
The earnings call?
Yeah.
Why? Why was it hard? For the earnings?
Mm-hmm.
The earnings call? Are you talking about the stuff at the bottom of the research?
No,
are you,
it's
no, you go to the company itself.
Yeah,
okay, well let's do one. Let's take a look at Coca. What do you think the website for Coca-Cola is?
Coca-Cola,
right. Coca-Cola.com. That's one of the ones I asked you to look at, right?
Yeah.
And what you're looking for is investor relations. Where is it? Nutrition. About the Coca-Cola company?
No.
Investor relations? No, I don't see it. I don't got my glasses on. I would go here. I'm just. This is what I would do, okay? Because you have to do it every time. They're always different. Usually, you have something along the top that says investor relations. But here, go to about the Coca-Cola company, and there should be a link that says investor relations, leadership, human and resources, Coca-Cola company. Here it is. Investors main. Investors here. And 2011 year review, financial reports and information, investor webcasts. This is what we want to do here. Investor webcasts. And select calendar. Where's the earnings call? Here it is, right here. It's not until April 16th. So we want to go to the other one. Here it is, right there, February 12th. The Coca-Cola webcast discussed 2012 fourth quarter earnings on Tuesday, February 12th of 2012.
There's one for 2013.
No, that's a mistake. That's supposed to be 2013. It says February 12th, 2013. Somebody put the wrong number here. But that's the one you want, right there. So you click on that. And in the meantime, feel free to get lost and go to other places, too. Feel free to look at some of their other things, because they got Coca-Cola has a ton of crap on their website. Oh, poopy balls. You got to register.
You Google it and find it.
You had to Google it?
Yeah.
I just found it.
But you still log into that.
Okay, you have to register. They want you to register.
Yeah,
we'll screw that. You guys do that. I'm not going to register now. Let's look at another company. What else did I ask you to look for? Procter & Gamble, another excellent company. So watch. If you don't even want to do that, you can just go to the Yahoo and type in PG for Procter & Gamble, because that's all I know about them. And if you go to Profile, they'll tell you where the website is. Where is the website? Here it is, PG.com. So let's get lost. Let's go to PG.com and let's find investor shareholder relations right there. So click on that. And come on. They have little pictures of sweet little kids. And then earnings projections. Deliver second quarter core. There it is. Right there it is. Raises sales and outlook. So that's what you're going to do. And if you don't like the company, that company, go try another company. The assignment for chapter 6 is the exact same thing you did for the exam, and the exact same thing as worksheet number 1 and worksheet number 2. And the assignment for number 17 that we'll do is just some of these ratios. So when we come back on Tuesday, we went through the common stock ratios, and we didn't do any because you just looked those up. We will do the rest, not all of them, we'll do some of them. And if you notice the assignment, I just asked you to do 12. So some of them you can look up, some I want you to do. So when we come back, we're going to then go through the profitability, liquidity, leverage ratios. Pretty easy stuff, especially after chapter 6. At the same time, you're studying this, you're also going back and studying chapter 5 and chapter 6. Is that a deal? Because I'm going to ask you many of the same questions that were on the exam. I mean, different worded. They're not going to be exactly the same. They're going to be worded differently, but the same concepts. Yes, question?
When is it taken?
It's not until they come after, back from spring break.
Yes, but when is the spring break?
After next week.
Oh.
After next week, we got a week off.
Okay.
And you're all going to study all week long, right?
No.
There's no football, right? Exactly, no football. Okay, see you next Tuesday.